Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, and thank you for joining us today for the Business Deep Dive on Institutional Shareholder Services, ISS. With me are Stephan Leithner, Executive Board Member of Deutsche Börse, responsible for pre- and post-trading, and Gary Retelny, Chief Executive Officer of ISS. Stephan and Gary will take you through the presentation today. This will take approximately half of the session, and after that, we are very happy to take your questions. The presentation materials for the call have been sent out via email and can also be downloaded from the Investor Relations section of our website. During the presentation, all lines in terms of the video and the audio are muted. The event will be recorded and is available for replay afterwards. With this, let me hand over to you, Stephan.
Jan, thank you very much. Thank you very much for the initiative of allowing for such a meeting in the context of our investor relations activity. We couldn't have had a better choice of the date in two ways. The one, it's virtually exactly a year ago that Gary, at our Capital Markets Day on the 17th of November, was presenting the announcement. And, you know, keep in mind, that was the announcement. It's at the end of February that the transaction then closed, but still it's a year of intense, you know, work together on first planning and then later clearly in execution already. The secondly, we're very fresh in being able to travel back into the U.S. without the national travel exemption. So being here together in New York in the ISS offices, I think is in itself an important signal of how we work together. So the way Gary and I are going to break this up is I will set a bit the context of the acquisition again and how we do on some of the touch points, because we at the time highlighted to you the broad strategic touch points that exist between the group and what ISS is doing. And Gary will take you through the four sort of segments and give you a real sense of what is ISS all about. And then obviously together we are available for questions and answers in terms of giving you that perspective from both sides. Let me kick it off by talking to the context of ISS from a Deutsche Börse Group perspective again. And the major market trends that we in the context of our Compass 23 strategy have seen for a number of years being consistent have really all of them underpinned the momentum behind us looking and working early on with ISS and Gary about a partnership. Those trends actually, I believe, have continued to accelerate. And when we later talk about the outperformance this year of ISS, those trends really strongly support it. Let me just quickly run those down one more time so you see how broad, again, the coverage of ISS on our major trends is. ESG clearly is a word in everybody's mouth. In Europe, with next year, it will be fundamentally transform the asset management market in terms of the private individuals, as well as the institutions that already have been driving it. So there, you know, the fact that this led us to ESG will come back and throughout the presentation, Gary, in a similar way. But what I would emphasize beyond just ESG as a theme is really the rise of the data and the quality of data. And that's where, again, one of the things there is no better fit than ISS when we talk about quality of data. It's the focus on quality of differentiated data offering, rather than the broad and amorphous, and also Me Too type offering that really sets ISS apart. And that's what Gary and the team have continued to develop over the last year. Now, clearly the linkage into the buy side, and we'll show some of the numbers, is something that is a transformation that we as Deutsche Börse Group have been, you know, pursuing now for a number of years. And you've seen this not only in the last 3 or 4 years as part of the direction we're traveling. Again, with 4,000 clients, ISS has a distinctive footprint there. As we, at the end of the day, look beyond what is the business and the market, but also the regulatory frame is truly accelerated in the last year as a driver. So if we look at the regulatory requirements from ESG, that's a big part of what is driving demand and the offering, you know, that ISS has been rapidly adjusted to that. So again, it's a trend which we often only look at negatively. In the context of ISS, the regulatory pressures are actually a very positive, which for us as a group is a very important complement to the areas where regulatory requirements for our regulated businesses are often more demand on cost than an opportunity. And last but not least, you know, we keep talking about the mega trend on digitization. Again, with the data context, that is something where ISS very much fit the pattern what we were looking for. So all of those trends a year or 18 months ago, actually by now, led us to start and in a proactive way have the discussions with ISS. ISS is a true leader in this context. I'll talk about that in a minute. What we ended up was the structure, to remind you, that is a strategic partnership in two dimensions. The one is 80% investment by Deutsche Börse, and then the remaining 20% is Genstar Capital, who used to be the controlling private equity player, as well as ISS management and Gary and the team. And that's a very important part of how the entire setup was put in place. And secondly, the element around ISS, because of its research and advisory activities and its distinctive culture, we had a very clear mutual understanding that it's operating at arm's length, the independence of the research. And that's something that we have been very vocal about and articulated clear rules and procedures, is something that is at the heart of ISS credibility. And the transition, if I may say, has worked well on that. The acceptance and understanding of the market is strong. So if we now look from the trends and the transaction setup to the underpinnings that we found with ISS, then, you know, we looked at this as a global leader in corporate governance that was branching into ESG. A year later, that has dramatically accelerated, because the importance of corporate engagement is, in a way, for the entire ESG topic, has become so prominent that ISS really has a very unique spot on this. I think we have talked about the best-in-class data businesses that I mentioned. The more we, over the year, have looked into this, the top three type position that we describe for ISS on ESG data, with particular expertises, like Gary will talk about on the climate side, on the areas of info security and others, have just continued to set it apart. And it is really driving a higher degree of recurring revenues and outpacing the revenue growth expectation that we had. The brand, a year ago, already mentioned the quality of that brand. And what we found over the year is something that has much more than confirmed this. I think ISS is such a powerful quality association that it brings, with the buy side of 2,000 plus asset managers. You know, all the big ones are there. Seeing clients like doing this here in New York is just a manifest of what ISS really stands for and what we have found in that context. So I think the complementarity topics that we a year ago talked about are very true. But before I go into the product complementarities across Deutsche Börse's value chain, is again the US franchise, the US perspective, also sitting here in New York, that Gary and the team bring is so complementary to the European starting point, and a bit the sense of urgency out of Europe in many European underdeveloped opportunities that we see will drive a good complementarity in terms of growth momentum across the geographies also going forward. So if we look at the complementarities from a value chain perspective, then a year ago, we talked about three main areas. The one is clearly on the next page, the entire theme around ESG research, the rating, the analytics, the advisory on those, and the linkage into Qontigo on the one hand side, our index business, but then more broadly into Eurex and the other parts of our value chain. I will show you in a second, we have made good progress on that. I think the governance research and proxy voting, the core of ISS, the traditional core, has always had a relationship with Clearstream that has continued to foster in the context of a transformational dynamics that is happening in that space as we speak over the next years. And then I think the last point that people have so far little focused on, and Gary will give a much better sense today, is that the excellence in the research and data on distribution topics in a market intelligence area, something that at the time we only skirted on, but it very neatly and very closely relates to what Deutsche Börse with IFS and its fund activities has continued to see outperform the other businesses. So I think in all those three themes we talked about, the next page, let me just be a bit specific. We are now, as I said, since the closing end of February, we're basically 7 months into this in execution mode. And the linkage between ISS, ESG, and the Qontigo environment is certainly a very important one. If you look, we have a standard core index set on the climate side, Paris aligned and CTB based. So I think that is a very good, you know, framework of which we can work. We have made continued good progress on the ETF and the publicly visible sort of joint products, of which high profile European names are something that have been achieved together. And then last, the trend that is so often talked about, the customized segregated mandates and the segregated approach, that's where we do see good wins with asset managers. So the momentum there is clearly building. It's in the context of an open platform approach on both sides at this point. That's what we continue to emphasize. The second area that I alluded to was with respect to the market intelligence, and there the link into our IFS business. So again, where are we today? The fund center distribution platform has gotten the linkage to ISS ESG products on a number of areas. So that's something that is for our fund center platform an important differentiation over time that we expect has a good sort of setup, and we're working on doing more there. The third area to highlight is, and I already alluded to it, is in the core sort of proxy voting activities. And that's where Clearstream is a major operator in the European markets in particular. The European markets in the context of Shareholder Rights Directive and others are changing rapidly. So the two really mirror in capability, but the ISS, through its excellence in research, brings a differentiating aspect with respect to all the investor contexts. So that's working well, and then the last one is with respect to the trading venues. There, a very important and an early and high visible win was that the ISS Corporate Solutions, that Gary will talk in more detail, a very exciting, fast-growing area. The link up with our German cash market business allows us to now really produce sort of access to ESG disclosure and ratings for corporates in a much better way. And that makes Frankfurt and Xetra a more attractive venue in terms of the information being available. So the message here from a group perspective, our objectives that we started from and why did we get to ISS have very much been confirmed and intensified. And the linkage points that we talked about are still truly getting momentum behind them. That's very exciting to see. Now, you're really all dialed in to learn more in the depth of ISS. So let me hand it over to Gary, nobody better placed, since he has been driving all these different businesses now for a number of years.
Thank you very much, Stefan, and thank you for your kind words on ISS and on the team. And as we had discussed for so many months prior to the announcement of the transaction, and now in actual execution mode, there are very, very large, interesting opportunities within ISS and in Deutsche Börse that we're just starting to essentially scratch the surface on, but that we expect would potentially drive growth for both entities for years to come. Of course, the hard part always is on the execution, but the strategic rationale and thought is actually quite clear, and the paths are quite clear, and that's a great, great starting point. What we thought we would do today in this presentation, in this what I will call get acquainted with ISS session, is to give you a sense of what the businesses of ISS are. So we're going to walk through a few slides that actually go through the various businesses of ISS, and then we'll address any questions that you might have afterwards. So let me start on the slide that you have. I believe it's slide five, the slide that is on the screen, to give you a little bit of what ISS truly is today. So ISS today is essentially composed of, you can think of them as business lines. We think of them as business units that focus on serving global investors and corporations alike. They are separate businesses, but you will see where many of the synergies actually are. So our legacy and largest business has been our governance business. You see the four blocks underneath that statement: ISS Governance, ESG, Corporate Solutions, and MI, which stands for Market Intelligence. And if you go to the left, you see what governance is all about. That is what typically people know ISS for. It's our core business. It has been around for almost 40 years. It is the global leader in the space, without a doubt. We actually cover approximately 45,000 or so meetings a year. To give you a sense of reference, we commit to our clients to subscribe to our governance services that we will provide advice on how to vote their shares on any public company in the world that they are a shareholder on. Obviously, no one else does that commitment. And our second largest competitor is roughly half the size of what ISS does and is. So our governance business is what we're have been mostly known for. It's what you read about in the paper. It includes also the business that focuses on transactions like M&A, where issues come up for votes by shareholders. And we provide that advice to our clients. It focuses primarily on asset managers as well as asset owners, i.e. pension funds. And it truly is our global business. As you saw in the slides that Stefan discussed prior to this, we have 30 offices, and we have literally a presence, and we cover approximately 115 markets around the world in our governance business. And we, again, work very, very closely with our asset manager and asset owner clients in terms of providing this advice. The second business unit that you see here is our ESG business unit. That is one of our fastest growing business units. It's not the only one. And ESG, as Stefan mentioned, is the focus of the world, really, at this time. I actually read a very interesting quote. I think it was in the Financial Times, but don't hold me to that. That basically said that ESG is the second largest revolution after the Industrial Revolution in terms of capital spend. And given what is happening in the world, you could see why someone would make that statement. But essentially, ESG is extremely broad. ISS focuses on the data that underpins many of the ESG-centric decisions that both asset managers, asset owners, and companies need to make to be able to navigate that space. And it is fast-flowing, and data and quality, as Stefan mentioned, marry a great deal. We'll talk a little bit more about the specifics of ESG, but that's our second business unit. And these are in no particular order of importance or relevance. They're all equally important to us. The third one that is highlighted on the page is our corporate solutions business unit. That one focuses exclusively on companies, or what are also known as issuers. And that business is segregated and run separately from other businesses. And the focus clearly is on providing the best possible data, analytics, and advice to our corporate clients around the world to help them manage governance issues, compensation issues, financial issues through our EVA offerings, and then, of course, sustainability, which essentially is ESG. It also encompasses now cybersecurity. We'll talk about that in a second. And the final business unit our latest one, or newest one, I guess I should say, that came to us principally through the acquisition of Strategic Insight a number of years ago, a few years ago. And that provides market insight into distribution for asset managers who want to target products and to expand their fund footprints, whether it's ETF or funds or otherwise, on a global basis. And it's a unique set of data that is very hard to build and to maintain that provides significant insight into the markets. And it's focused on distribution. And of course, part of that involves ESG funds more and more. The next gray box that most people will probably just glance at and skip is fundamental to the competitive advantages that ISS has. So let me just take 1 second and highlight it. So underpinning these four business units is our integrated data and technology platforms, particularly our data platforms. We have a very strong data collection and analysis, as well as data cleansing operation that is global in nature, We're very proud of it. We think it's unique. And it gives ISS one of its key competitive advantages and is a key differentiator in both our quality of data as well as the breadth of the data that we provide that, again, underpins the four business units that you see on top. So I think I've covered most of what the next section discusses, the product set and breadth. Obviously, we focus on innovation, our uniqueness in terms of our data sets in all of the business units that you see above, and of course, our ability to scale, which is absolutely fundamental if you want to have and provide a global product and a global data set to our clients, particularly as they themselves continue to grow and focus on the global nature of their offerings. At the bottom of the page, you see a classification that we use for simplicity. When someone asks the question, so how much of your business is ESG and related? And remember that ESG also means G, that's governance, and what is not. We have simplistically separated the way that you see it here with governance, ESG, corporate solutions, or pieces thereof, and that leads to about 72% of the business. And then 28% of the business is what we very simplistically call non-ESG, although I think that over time you're going to see ESG become much, much more relevant and impactful as well in our MI operations. So these numbers could change over time. So if we move to the next slide, we're going to try to give you a little bit of a sense of each one of the business units, and I'll try to move a little quicker here. As I mentioned, governance is what ISS has traditionally been known for. That's what the brand has stood for many, many years. And inside the governance business, you essentially have four distinct businesses. The governance, research, and voting business, which is, what everybody thinks of when they think about ISS. But let me just highlight that business also involves dealing very closely with the logistics of both providing the research and then voting the shares for clients. It is a very complex process. And as time goes by, it becomes even more customized. So a big part of this business is what we call the custom business or the custom proxy business, which essentially it means that we provide our services to companies who have their own guidelines and their own views as to how to vote their shares. And we work very closely with them in figuring out what those are and then actually executing, first designing, implementing, and then executing the voting policies that align with each individual asset manager recommendations and their own views. Having said that, just keep in mind that many of those asset managers, and I'm sure you're part of a number of them, themselves have clients who have very different views as to how their shares should be voted. So we work very closely with many, many clients who have different views internally. And just to give a little bit of perspective, it's not monolithic, which essentially means that we have clients that vote both for and against the same item in a proxy, even though they happen to be at the same firm. So it's very complex. I would say that over 75%, probably over 80% of the shares that are now voted are voted under custom policy recommendations. And I would say that the largest clients in the world are now almost all custom policy clients. But the big picture is very straightforward. We help them design their plans. We help them design and recommend how to vote. We provide a fairly comprehensive report on each individual company, which has a vast amount of background data. It's not simply, this is how we recommend you vote for and against, and these are the items. Sometimes there are 50, 60 pages underpinning those recommendations and providing context as to what they are. that asset managers and asset owners actually use both for their own engagement with companies, but also for their own analysis to make up their own minds. And those reports are extremely valuable, and that's where the data centricity of what we do comes into play. A second business inside of our governance business is our proxy distribution business. It's essentially a non-US business. And I won't talk much more about that. I'm happy to deal with questions as they come, but essentially it's the ability to distribute it materials outside of the US and work with custodians and providing the ability for them to vote their shares and also distribute the materials for the various and for the various meetings. The third business inside of governance is our securities class action business. This is a processing business. We are not providing legal advice per se in the SCAS business. Essentially, when there is a class action suit that has been resolved, there are funds to be distributed to the class, which includes, as you might imagine, sometimes hundreds of thousands, if not millions, of individuals or funds. Our business essentially is to process that. And you can imagine the complexity over the years. If you think about a fund with shareholders coming in and out of the fund and when they come in and when they come out and how long did you own this stock for, it is an extremely complex process. So it takes a fair amount of time working closely with a client who provides all this data. And that's what the SCAS business is. Again, it sits inside of governance. And finally, liquid metrics. And that also is a very nice business. It focuses on trade execution quality, transaction cost analysis, I guess, is one of the terms that is used to describe this sector. We're very excited about it as well. And we think that also is growing. All these segments, we believe, are growing segments. So that gives you a sense of what governance is at ISS. If you turn the page now, I think what we wanted to do here is just very simply give you a sense of the growth of ESG. We'll talk about ESG in a second, and what we see happening in the marketplace. But you see here the global spend on ESG. You probably have seen many, many graphs like this, right? They're obviously all pointing up towards the right. But you see the compounding growth rate of 25%. What is really interesting here, at least in my opinion, is that this market is accelerating its growth, even as it grows and expands. So it's a challenge for all of us who are providers into that space to keep up with that growth, not only in terms of headcount, but in terms of products, and of course, in terms of quality. As clients get more sophisticated and they get also more demanding and their expectations increase, both in terms of quality, but also in terms of timing. And we believe that ISS has done a pretty strong job in being able to meet those requirements as we continue to build our ESG business offerings. So to the right, you see our positioning. We think that we are one of the global top three data providers in the space. We think that we're gaining share with our growth rate versus what we see in the market. And we're probably even stronger than that because the market is broader and it probably encompasses sectors that ISS ESG is currently not involved in, but that may be involved in the next couple of years. And we continue to build on the traditional strengths that we bring from the governance side that apply to our ESG side. And as it says there, we continue to do bolt-on M&As in the space. We've recently done two. Acre Data is focusing on municipal data in the US markets. And the FICO Cyber Risk Score, just like it says, focuses on the cyber market, which also is fastly growing. And in my opinion, cyber is part of ESG. And will continue to be so. It's something that boards are focusing on. Many times, if you ask directors or CEOs, if someone were to ask me, what do you lose sleep on? I think cyber risk is one of those things that is way, way at the top of anybody's risk list in terms of what is important to focus on. And NISS is pursuing that opportunity. It is early days, so I don't want to oversell it here, but it's something that we care deeply about and we think is a great fit with our ESG business. So if you turn the page now, we can talk a little bit about ESG, which is a great driver of not only the business inside of ISS, but also the businesses inside of Deutsche Börse and the leverage that Stefan mentioned with regards to the various touch points. And I think you're going to see more and more of that come out over the next months and years. Just some key figures at the left of this page. We do about 9,700 corporate ratings in ESG, and that continues to increase. We've crossed the 1,000 client mark now. We're probably around, as it says here, 1,100 clients. We do about 25,000 fund ratings, and our team is 460 people and growing fast, also with global footprints. To the right, you have the various components of what ISS ESG encompasses. I'm not going to go into the details of each one because you can just see what the descriptions are, but I'll highlight them all, right? Screening and controversies. That's probably one of the older services that people used to provide in terms of being able to segregate companies that you don't want in your portfolio for whatever reason or different reasons. Controversies is very important. It's to be able to canvas the world essentially to see if there are issues that might potentially impact your investments based on what those companies are doing in providing their own services around the world. The next category is ESG ratings. This is a fast evolving field. It's a very important field, but ratings, just as the name implies, allows you to basically look at a company and provide a rating for it in terms of its ESG. I think that one of the unique things that we do at ISS, and we're refining this, so this is still work in progress, is that we provide both a relative rating as well as an absolute rating. And I don't think no one else does that. Most of the ratings you see in the space tend to be relative ratings. And we think that it's important to do both. First, to be sure that you're comparing companies in similar industries and you're not penalizing someone because they happen to be in a different industry than just to make it very explicit, right? The obvious, you're in banking or you're potentially in oil exploration, right? Or natural gas. Well, those are very different businesses. So you would want to be able to make distinctions between what a company does in one area versus another. Then we have a specialty scores and data business. It's very descriptive there, so I don't think I'm going to touch more on it. The fourth one we highlight here is our climate data. We believe our climate data, as Stefan mentioned in his opening, is leading. World leading in terms of its quality. We believe that climate is probably the most top of mind of all topics today. Obviously, we're in the midst of COP26, but that's what everybody talks about. I think it's absolutely top of mind in a very large opportunity for ISS as well as for Deutsche Börse. Having said that, I would not dismiss the other businesses. They're all fast growing. And the relative importance of them changes over time. Climate is probably top of mind right now, but the others are just as important. The fifth one we note here is index. Stefan already mentioned some of the areas of cooperation with Contigo and the stocks index family they have with regards to ESG. I would expect a lot more of that in the future. It's hard work, because you want to make sure you have both the quality of the data as well as the quality of the index calculator, both working in unison. But we think that with the strength of our data and the strength of the stocks index capabilities, we will have a unique view as to how this should develop. And again, it's going to take time, but it's something that we think about all the time. ISS also has introduced some indices as well that focus on EVA, which is trying to provide a financial overlay on ESG. Because ultimately what you want is the ability for portfolio managers and other asset managers to use this information to make judgments on their investments in terms of what to buy and what to sell, when to buy, when to sell, and to fundamentally understand what the risks are and what they're doing. I should have mentioned under climate as well that one of the most interesting businesses that is developing is the second party opinion business with regards to debt and the rating of debt from an ESG point of view. I think we'll touch on that in the next section. And then the final one here, and this is really something that we're starting to explore, as I mentioned, is the cyber risk. And we think that that is part of ESG, although it's not talked about that way yet. We think that eventually it will be. And we expect this business also to continue to grow in importance for ISS. So if you turn the page, Jan, please. The next business unit is our corporate solutions business unit. As I mentioned before, this is a business unit that focuses exclusively on providing services, data, analytics, and advisory services to issuers, to companies, essentially in four distinct suites inside the business. Our compensation suite, which helps companies manage their compensation, mostly for publicly traded companies. And do peer analysis. Our governance suite, which encompasses a vast repository of governance data to do also a peer analysis and to manage their own programs. Our sustainability suites, and this is where I was just mentioning the second party opinion, which focuses on the ability to provide an ESG rating for a debt instrument, as well as others who provide credit ratings. And this internally right now is probably the fastest growing of all the suites inside of corporate solutions, although all are exhibiting growth. And then of course, cyber, which I mentioned already, except that here is focused on corporate versus the ESG business unit is focused on the institutional side. We have over 1,500 clients, very high penetration of the S&P. It's close to 200 people in terms of professionals globally. It has traditionally been U.S.-centric, although now we are expanding around the world, in Asia and in Europe, particularly with the relationships that Deutsche Börse brings to us. So you'll probably be seeing a lot more from our corporate solutions team over the years. And I'll stop there on that one because I know we're running out of time. And then finally, our MI business unit, which provides, as I mentioned, data and analytics and insight on workflow solutions for global asset managers, as well as insurance company and others. And this allows asset managers to focus on distribution. And that's a very broad thing to do, but it provides them a particularly good lens into how the businesses are running and what funds are succeeding and who is selling what to whom, in where that is happening, and what products and services are getting traction, and where are they getting traction. And these are unique data sets as well that companies use to make evaluations. What you see inside of MI are a whole slew of products. We've highlighted just a few here. SimFund, which essentially does what I just mentioned with data sets. A BrightScope, which is similar in that it encompasses information on retirement plans, so it focuses on 401k plans and related, and gives you information as to what those plans are doing and what they hold and w- which funds are successful, which are less successful. The third one you see here is Rainmaker. Rainmaker is an acquisition that we just closed on in Australia. So it's similar to what I just described in the above, except that it focuses obviously with Australia's largest investment managers. So it's highly complementary to the other businesses inside of MI, including the next one here called Matrix Solutions, which has some of the similar information that you see in Rainmaker and our other businesses, but that is focused on the UK market principally. We think that this business can grow in other parts of Europe as well. And then the other category has also a number of other businesses that sit inside of MI that at some point we would love to talk about, but in the spirit of running out of time, I think we leave for another day because it's a large number of them and also very exciting. So that gives you a sense of the MI business. So if you turn the page, just a quick note of our latest acquisition. It's a company called Discovery Data. We made the announcement, I believe, a couple of weeks ago. And you see all the data for it here that we are providing and the strategic rationale. It provides many of the things that we do outside the U.S. with Clarity and Rainmaker in Australia and the U.K. It essentially Discovery Data does in the U.S. It's a very well-recognized, high-quality firm. We're thrilled that we were able to reach an agreement to acquire it. We're going through the usual processes in terms of closing, and we expect that we will close by the end of Q4 of this year. It again, because it will be part of MI, it will be the information will be consolidated with what we call non-ESG in terms of our financial reporting. But just be careful with the non-ESG because over time you will see a lot of the ESG data and governance data feed into those businesses as well. So that gives you a sense of Discovery Data. And again, lots of detail here on this slide that I'm not going to read because I think you can do that yourselves if you're interested in the detail. And with that, I think I'll turn it back to Stefan.
Thank you very much, Gary. And I think in summarizing the historic and the outlook, let us today, we don't want to give you any new guidance in a way, but let us put it back into the context. A year ago already, we talked about the strength of the track record in growth that ISS has shown. And I think we talked at the time, and we sort of put this back on the page here, the 14% sort of top line growth, which really is a blend, an excellent blend of organic growth and accretive M&A, that is something that we continue to see to work. We have seen that the strength of the brand also as a partner and for bolt-on M&A that ISS represents by its culture has throughout this year, you know, with three smaller and we've just seen the Discovery Data bigger acquisitions has continued to work. And therefore, I think the underlying momentum that you see in the reported numbers for this year is more than outperforming any of our expectations. We, you know, it's hard to track sort of given the closing date, the sort of three quarters to some extent or March and then the second and third quarter, which we now have reported on. You know, they don't easily multiply up to the year, but we have talked about a roughly 300 million type business that ISS represents. You see that especially in our third quarter numbers, that the margin expectation that we represented at the time around 35% adjusted EBITDA margin is something that we very much find is in the business with a scaling capability. But it's truly something that is outperforming, and the top line numbers with 15% year on year in the relevant months that we show here just gives you a sense that the 5% organic net revenue growth, which we talked about a year ago, is something that is certainly, you know, very much on the low side of the way we look at this. The performance is not only strong for this year because of the organic, we do see a continued bolt-on M&A momentum over the next years to come. And Gary has alluded to many of the different options that exist in each of the businesses to also drive it inorganically. So if I, therefore, you know, before we move to the questions, let me just summarize, you know, that our conviction that we had, why we went into this transaction, both by the team and the business, have been very much confirmed. It's just an outstanding business that we really, as Deutsche Börse, pride ourselves. I would close before the M&A by before the Q&A by one last point, which is all of you are also customers of ISS. So look at today as an invitation, not in the Q&A, but by written email to Jan. We're happy, you know, to talk more about these products. I think this is pretty unique that so many of you, in a way, are natural customers for what ISS is really doing. And that's something that we have seen an enormous pickup and interest in the engagements across Deutsche Börse Group to talk about ISS and what it can offer for our clients. So let me close here, Jan. Hand it back to you for the Q&A.
All right. Thank you, Stefan. Thank you, Gary. This brings us to the Q&A session. You can ask a question by raising the hand in Microsoft Teams. I see that some of you have already done so, and we will basically call up your name, unmute your microphone, and then it's your turn. It would also be great if you can could switch on your camera now so that we and the rest of the audience can see you. In case you have dialed in via the telephone line, then it would be great if you could send me an email so that we know that you want to ask a question. And again, we would let you know when it's your turn to ask that question. So with this, we're kicking off. The first question comes from Johannes Thormann at HSBC. So could we please unmute Johannes?
Hello, everybody. Can you hear me, Jan?
Yes, loud and clear.
Okay. Thank you very much. Good morning to the US and good afternoon from Europe. Johannes Thormann, HSBC. Two questions, if I may. First of all, on the page 5 of the presentation, you showed us the 4 business lines. Can you elaborate a bit more on the EBITDA margin of those businesses, if there is a big difference, or as they are based on this integrated data technology platform, are they relatively similar? Or probably, if you don't want to share it by numbers, at least indicate what is the most profitable business, and is ESG and stewardship more profitable than non-ESG? Just help us understand this. And secondly, on slide 7, why do you think you can grow by 30% when the market can grow with a 25% CAGR? Thank you very much.
So on your first question, I'll defer to Jan and the DB1 team, right, the Deutsche Börse team, to come back with whatever details they actually share as a public company in the analysis. But I can tell you this. ESG is the fastest growth in the one that we're allocating a significant amount of capital to, so it will have the lower margin. Not because the business is a low margin business, but because we are allocating a significant amount of growth capital to it in terms of people, in terms of new product development, application development, and all of the organic things that typically go with that. So obviously there are significant costs, but the EBITDA margin is positive. So all these businesses have strong margins. And I would even say that ESG over time is gonna have a very strong margin as well. So I answered it maybe in the negative. They're all pretty good, very consistent businesses in terms of their margins. And ESG is the one that will catch up at some point, but it is the one that obviously is getting a significant amount of capital spend, and that impacts the margin because of what's happening in that space.
But I would emphasize very much and underpin what Gary said in that overview chart, which you referred to, and that is the integrated data and technology infrastructure that really sets a sort of ISS apart and allows also in the growth businesses to very much leverage, you know, the scaling capability. I mean, especially in the ESG environment, the data cleansing and quality and the research is important. And thereby that common data infrastructure allows to leverage it in a number of areas. Maybe on your growth question, the second one, why outperforming the market? I mean, Gary obviously has given you a quite detailed sense of the depth of the ESG offering. So what we there refer to is the core ESG data offering, not in the broader sense, because clearly there are some businesses that are more established who have very good growth rates and the governance side, but that are not above 30%, but in the core data area. You know, what we just have seen is that ISS is in a highly fragmented market, because keep it in mind, the ESG data market is still very much fragmented. And in that context, it's not just the bolt-on M&A, but it's very important that through the breadth and comprehensiveness of the offering, ISS is really picking up market share in areas where, you know, smaller niche players historically have been able to play a role. And now that market is organically and inorganically consolidating. And that's why there is a market share gain and outperformance of growth in that core ESG data area.
And to add to what Stefan just said, there is a recognition that ISS is now one of the strong ESG data providers. So if you would have asked someone in the market 5-10 years ago, what does ISS do? I don't think you're going to have, you would have had many people say, oh yeah, they're in ESG, right? Even though G is governance, and we believe we're the best data governance centric company in the world. And we have done, and this team has done, taking myself out of it, a phenomenal job in bringing ESG to the forefront, as a, not only in terms of our data, the quality of the data, but in terms of bringing a product set to investors who can use it for their own analytics. So the reason we're growing so fast is that we now are competing with the largest providers in the space, whereas a few years ago we were not. And now we're not only a viable competitor, when we are compared to others in the space, we essentially are winning our fair share of those RFPs and others. So the fact is that we were not there before a number of years ago, and we are there now, and we continue to improve both the breadth and the depth of the offering. And that has served us well versus others who've been there before in terms of our growth rate. That's basically how I would elaborate a little further on what Stefan just said. Hopefully that makes sense.
Well, thank you. Yeah, thank you.
The next question comes from Rich Repetto at Piper Sandler. Can we please unmute Rich? Rich, if you can hear us, I think your mic is still on mute. All right, then maybe we skip Rich for the time being and we switch to Benjamin Goy from Deutsche Bank. Could we get Benjamin, please?
So I hope this works. Can you hear me?
Yes. Very well.
Perfect. Cool. Two questions from my side, please. First, it seems like ISS surpassed the expectations you presented last year. So I was just wondering which of the four sub-businesses was in particular driving this outperformance. And then secondly, at the same time, Gary, you gave us an indication what the four businesses are growing.
You just went on mute again, Benjamin. We didn't get the last part of what you were saying.
Maybe we'll answer the first.
Sorry. I think, now I could unmute myself again. Sorry, did you get the first question?
Yes.
Perfect. And then just maybe quickly the second one. Market intelligence was growing slower than the other three businesses last year, but now you did the two major acquisitions in last year in market intelligence. So maybe what attracts you to this business to spend significant amount of capital on that? Is it lack of opportunities in ESG, or of course that it's so to say, the more attractive business to spend on at the moment? Thank you.
Sure. Do you want me to tackle both or try? When ISS tends to be a fairly conservative company in how we think about our growth rates. And we were coming out of a pandemic last year, and the growth rates were modest but positive during the pandemic year. ISS, even if I say so myself, did a phenomenal job in the transition to remote. We did it in a handful of days, and we supported our clients, particularly in the early days of the pandemic. And people were trying to figure out what comes next. And as we were having conversations with our Deutsche Börse partners, we wanted to be more muted in our assessment of what we were seeing in the marketplace. Knowing and understanding that we believe that our products were strong products, and that at some point that growth would ignite. And we didn't expect it to ignite that quickly, that fast. We were ready for it. So it was a little bit of a surprise that we saw that growth rate as I guess everybody did around the world in so many ways. We were very pleased with it. We were fortunately able to capture it, and we're ready for it. So that's what really changed. The expectations in the marketplace changed. And the second thing that changed is that governance and ESG are quickly becoming part of the investment process. If you think about governance and what it was a number of years ago, right, it was a middle office function. And it's quickly going into the front office. And ESG is also quickly moving, if it's not there already, in the front office, where portfolio managers, ETF providers, others are using the data to make investment decisions and to decide what to buy, when to buy it, how to buy it. And that data, of course, is of great importance to them. But it's moving to the front office. It's there already in so many ways for ESG. So that transition is happening at incredible speed. And the demand for quality data is very, very high. And in all fairness, if you're gonna provide global data, there are not many vendors out there who can actually do it. Many others talk about it, but ISS is one of the very, very few that can do it. And there's a recognition that ISS does do this, and that's new too, because it traditionally had been a governance-centric company. And now it has a very strong ESG business as well, not only on the institutional side is what we call it ISS ESG, but also on the corporate side in that sustainability suite that we mentioned. And that's a long answer, Benjamin, but that's why the growth rates were better than what we had thought initially. And the second question was, just to make sure that I
need to take the market intelligence question.
So market intelligence, so let me just say one thing quickly. The opportunities are very large in the other segments. We're not focusing on MI because there are no things to do in the others. It's just that the others, probably in the short term, although not necessarily, but probably in the short term, you will see a lot of organic development. We did a lot of acquisitions already. Actually, ISS has done 16 acquisitions. I think that once we close on Discovery Data, it'll be 17. And the focus has always been on quality of data and how can we leverage the plant that we have. And when we did the Strategic Insight acquisition, we thought that ESG data would fit really nicely into what MI does. There's a really interesting synergistic revenue opportunity there. MI already had good margins, so their growth rate was more muted, but part of it is because they've been moving in and out of some businesses as well. That this is pre-ISS. And so we always thought that we could get that business to growth. Clearly, the acquisition of Rainmaker and once we close up Discovery Data is going to give you that growth. Now, granted, it's coming from inorganic sources, but we believe that's going to translate also into organic growth as well. So we're very excited about that business too. Again, anything that has to do with data centricity with regards to insight for our clients and that leverages our plants, our ability to collect data and then integrate our ESG data into it is something that we're very keen on. Yeah, so hopefully that answers the two questions.
Yeah, thank you very much.
All right, so let's try Rich Repetto again at Piper Sandler. Rich, can you hear us? Rich Repetto? No, apparently not. So let's move on to the next one, please. Ian White from Autonomous. Could we unmute Ian, please?
Thanks very much. Hopefully you can hear me. Thanks very much. Okay, so two questions from my side, please. First of all, I wondered if you could tell us a little bit more about your pricing structures. So I'm assuming you don't price, per meeting you advise on or per rating, and these structures are higher level or more subscription based. But can you give us a sense of how long agreements typically run for? And I guess I'm trying to get a sense as to how sort of tight the link is between demand for more content from users and increased revenues at ISS. If you can help me to understand that, that would be appreciated, please. That's question one. And secondly, within ESG, am I right to think that the data collection and processing occurs in the first instance in sort of large offshore centers and is quite labor intensive? I have in mind that's quite common in this industry, in this type of business. And I just wondered if there was an opportunity there to actually bring more technology to bear and perhaps reduce cost and improve consistency as a result. I wonder if I get some thoughts on that as well, please.
So starting with the second question first, the answer is absolutely yes. If that's something that we're looking at in terms of technology enhancements, AI, and other data collection means. I mentioned this briefly, but it's no secret, you could go to our website and see it. The number of acquisitions we made in the ESG space over the years, right? They have to be integrated. And thereby lie also a fairly large number of opportunities for data collection. We have a very strong plant in terms of data collection already, and we're trying to leverage the ESG data collection through what we already do in various centers around the world. And that's work in progress. So the answer is yes, absolutely. We're still sorting out what we're doing where and when, as it's both the acquisitions that we made and the integration on the data collection on that side, as well as more data to be collected as clients are more demanding of what they need. And we also have the ability of providing it. So that will be both a technology solution as well as an expansion, most likely, of our centers of collection around the world. And in terms of the subscription businesses, most of our businesses are subscription businesses, just like other data businesses. They're high retention businesses. They used to be that most of them are annual contracts that either automatically keep going or are negotiated again on an annual basis at termination of the contract. There is no question that we have seen a trend towards lengthening those contracts. Clients want more stability in terms of the data, more access to the data. And once they get comfortable with one particular vendor, they want to extend the duration of those contracts. So it used to be that most of them were 1 year. We're seeing a fairly interesting number now that go to three, and we even have requests for five. So over time, you start see a migration, the lengthening, essentially a strengthening of the relationship, if you will, with a very large number of our clients. So the direction is clearly in extending the contract. And in terms of your question on pricing, it's very specific to the product, and therefore it really depends on so many things. How many products and the bundling capabilities? Is it only ESG? Is it ESG and governance? Is it a handful of people? Many times what you have are contracts where you have a base of research that clients want, X number of companies, if you will. And then if they need more, then they pay by exception. All that is negotiated. The team has been doing this for so many years, but there's no one linkage. There is no question though, that as the demand increases, either more people are looking at it and using it, or you have more companies that you're covering, that obviously is positive revenue leverage. It's not open-ended and you can just do whatever you want.
That's very clear, very detailed. Thanks for your help.
Yep.
Thanks, Ian. Next question comes from Gurjit Kambo at JP Morgan. Could we unmute Gurjit, please? Gurjit? Can't hear you, Gurjit. Is your line maybe still on mute? All right, then skip Gurjit as well, and try later on. Let's move to Mike Werner from UBS, please. Mike, can you hear us? Mike, can you hear us? No, apparently not.
Maybe we can't hear him.
Is he unmuted from?
Looks like.
You want to take out the mute wall?
Yeah, sorry about that. Then let's go to the next one, Tobias Lukas. Yes, Lukas from Kepler Cheuvreux.
Yes, hi there. Thanks for taking my question. Quickly on page 5, where you presented the split basically of non-ESG products, I was just wondering, and kindly excuse if you have provided the data beforehand, but coming from a top-down perspective and again watching the whole ESG business, I mean, could you elaborate on the G part of the whole business or the G part of the ESG business, and where is this part especially going? I mean, you highlighted that this is the best data governance company in the world, basically. We know that you have more than 40% of FTE basically working here. So A, is there more operating leverage in that, more automation? B, what is the strategy here? Will you do acquisitions more to grow that space? Is that where the juicy part is? Or do you rather see issues like climate and you're more going into the kind of green sphere? Thank you.
No, it's a great question. So governance is traditionally has traditionally been our oldest business. That's how ISS started. So it's the most established of the businesses, only in its longevity. Now, so it's something that clients have been using for many, many years. However, the use cases are evolving. So you might have clients who used to use it for maybe potential legal requirements or fiduciary obligations, and now it's becoming much more investment-centric. So the use cases are evolving for it actually quite quickly. And to be able to have the strength of our governance business, which includes, by the way, as I mentioned, not only the research and the data, but the actual voting part itself is actually quite powerful, because it allows us to leverage some of the things that we do in the other business units. So for example, you mentioned ESG climate, but I believe, and don't hold me to this, but I believe that 40 to 50% of items in the proxies now have to do with environmental matters, with ESG. So governance essentially has to tackle those, right? Our governance teams have to incorporate ESG now into the analysis to be able to provide proper recommendations with regards to how to, again, we're recommending how to vote your shares based on that proxy item. So you have the data that is coming from the ESG side, including what we call a policy, right? The proxy policy, climate friendly, whatever you want to call it, right? Benchmark, custom policy, and that those are getting extremely sophisticated. And you have many more users than you did in the past. You also have many more holdings inside most asset managers and asset owners in terms of companies that require their need to have this information. So I would say that you're looking at growth rates. You're not looking at the same growth rates as you are in ESG by any stretch, but you're still looking at what I would consider good growth rates for data businesses on the governance side. And what it does is that it gives you a uniqueness that others do not have. So what do I mean by that? If you're a subscriber to our governance research and you subscribe to our ESG, what we eventually hope to have is a fully unified, holistic product that actually takes you from end to end, including the ESG data. So if you want to incorporate ESG into proxy, there are not many places where you can actually do it. So our other ESG competitors, data providers, do not have it. So there's only one place that actually has both. And that's what we're hoping to leverage in the governance space. So there are positive trends there, but they're not as large, if you will, as the ones that you see in the ESG space. And as far as acquisitions go, the occasional small bolt-on is what you can expect in governance. Simply because ISS has a large footprint already, there are not many companies that you can buy, but there are some very, very localized regional players around the world that don't have the scale that they need to survive. And a number of them have reached out to us over time. So the occasional small bolt-on is something you could expect in governance. You might see bigger ones in ESG and elsewhere.
But the point that, Gary, that I must say I learned very much in that year or so is to back to the point you're making. The target addressable market is still enormously expanding in the governance space. Yes. Because of new items coming in, green, others, because you have this quality upgrade, the custom policies on the pricing. You thirdly have, and you know, many of the listeners today are in global asset management organizations. But if you look across the globe, many portfolios today are not yet voted in a way. There's still new areas and pockets, even within the same, you know, brand name that get added over time. So I think that multitude of growth vectors is something that is truly setting it apart. And as a point that Gary, you know, politely alluded only to, is others now start to talk that they not only have ESG data, but that they can relate it to the engagement and voting. They now start to talk about the corporate activities. Yeah. These things ISS already has in full development. And in both, you know, the governance as well as on the corporate side. It has pretty unique corporate market positions already. So the leverage of that additional themes is just big in these topics, which others now highlight all of a sudden because they realize how much ESG is not just a initial data, but you know how much it then is relevant to have the linkage to engagement and corporate and these topics.
There's a thought element to it, as Stefan is mentioning, that it's not just providing the data. And that's, of course, fundamental, but it's not sufficient. You have to link it with, so what does this really mean? And how do I use this? How can I actually execute on it? And that also brings software into play and a whole bunch of other things. But specifically with governance, that's basically what it is. As Stefan highlighted, it's still a good place to grow.
All right. The next question comes from Martin Price at Jefferies. He's on the phone. Could we please unmute Martin's phone line?
Hopefully you can hear.
Yes, we can hear you.
Oh, hello. Hi, guys. Hopefully you can hear me.
Yep.
Sorry. Thanks for the presentation and apologies for not being able to connect via video. I'm afraid our network appears to have blocked the link. I just had a follow-up question on the core governance business. I was just wondering if you could provide some thoughts on how pricing compares to competitors. I guess I'm just wondering if, as a market leader, your governance advice or research product has become in some sense must have and users can't really avoid it if they need to demonstrate to their clients that they're adhering to their fiduciary responsibilities. And so I was just wondering how that feeds into your pricing strategy and whether in fact you can price that product at a premium accordingly. Thank you.
I'm not sure I follow the question totally, but maybe you want to just. I'm trying to figure out what you're talking about, the need to subscribe or the need for the product itself, and how does our pricing compare with competitors? Is that the gist of it?
Yeah, exactly. I was just sort of trying to understand how the product is differentiated and how pricing compares to competitors.
Okay.
To what degree you have any pricing power in this market, really?
Okay, so in terms of differentiation, the easiest one to explain, and I mentioned this really quickly in passing, is the amount of coverage that we provide. So we commit to every single client that anything, any share that they own, any stock that they own, that actually has a voting item on a proxy, ISS will cover. And I don't think, and I may be wrong, but I don't think that any other client, any other competitor has both the ability or has said that that's what they would do. So we truly have a global business. I believe, depending on the year, we cover between 38,000 and 45,000 meetings a year. I believe that our second competitor or our largest competitor does less than half of that. So our coverage is significantly broader and wider than others in the space. So if you truly have a global business and you want to cover every security that you have from a proxy point of view, then ISS is your better choice. At least obviously that's my opinion. And then you have the quality issues around that. And in the history, the ability to connect their systems with our systems and make it as integrated and as seamless as possible. The ability to take their custom voting policies, not only design them, but actually execute on them. Our client service desks are very strong, have very strong relationships with clients. We spend a fair amount of time with them sorting all those things out. So it's both equality of data issue, it's the breadth of what we do, and then the quality of the service that we provide. Having said that, it's still competitive. I mean, clients, our competitors are very aggressive in terms of pricing. But as you go more custom, you provide broader products, then you do have a certain amount of pricing discretion that others do not have. So we try to be as competitive as possible, but are comfortable that our pricing is commensurate with the differentiated service and quality that we provide. To put it more bluntly, we're not the cheapest, and I don't think that we ever will be. We don't tend to compete with price, but we do keep it in mind because our competitors are obviously very aggressive with regards to price.
Understood. That's very helpful. Thanks, Gary.
Sure. My pleasure.
The next question comes from Pietro Cupa at Trinity Street Asset Management. Pietro?
Hey, guys. Thank you very much for the question. Two questions, if I may. Firstly, obviously, very impressive organic growth rate this year. Gary, I wanted to what extent there might be an element of a weak base from 2020. And maybe to shed some light on that, you could either share with us the organic growth rate for 2020 or perhaps your plans for 2022. There's the first question. The second question is, obviously, a lot of things going well in the business right now, and things are firing on all cylinders. What are the biggest challenges that you're facing at the moment as the CEO of this business? What are the things that perhaps are not going as well as you would like? Some businesses that perhaps are growing a bit slower than you would like, or you know, any other issues that you could point to? Thanks very much.
Sure. I'm sure you take the first one.
Go ahead.
Because it's about, you know, the disclosure and in that context. So I think, you know, let me put this for you. I mean, you know, go forward. We've given guidance and we've suggested that it's outperforming and you know, in that sense, surpassing what we had as context. So that gives you a bit of forward looking. I think in terms of this year, I would just describe a bit to you that throughout the process last year, you know, Gary was not shy of outperforming in the current trading. So I can tell you that was not last year was not a starting point that was marked by adjustment downwards of current trading relative to what was a pre-COVID type budget. So, you know, in living and running against that last year, the team did already well, and it's simply continuing throughout this year. So therefore, you know, I hope that ends you that answers both the past, gives you a perspective on the past and also on the outlook. So again, yeah. Gary, that's it.
And I would say that I would just add to what Stefan just said, and I totally defer, of course, to Deutsche Börse on the financial disclosure items, but our growth rate on a larger scale this year is faster than last year's. Right. So could that hold over time? I sure hope so. Can't obviously promise it, but yeah, the market is expanding, particularly in ESG, at such a fast rate. The demand is so high in many ways that it feeds the growth even as you get larger. And scale, believe it or not, matters in a positive way here. The better and bigger the scale that you have to provide global products on a timely basis with quality, it matters a great, great deal. So the larger clients will give you a larger part of their business, but not only the larger clients, also others that get comfortable with it. So at some point you get much, much bigger. We saw it in governance over the years and in the growth rate. It tends to decelerate. But we're not seeing that right now. Could it change next year? Yeah, but we're not seeing it right now. So that maybe just complements a little.
On your second point,
do you want to
give us, repeat it again, yeah. Just briefly?
The biggest challenge is...
Yeah, the biggest challenges, if any. I mean, a lot of companies are facing wage inflation, for example. I mean, there could be other things that are specific to your business.
Yeah. So As a CEO, I can tell you I worry about this every day, every day. So wage inflation is important, but it's not something that it's not at the top of my list in terms of what we worry about. Quality of hires, training those to be able to meet the demand is something that I worry about all the time. So it's not necessarily the wages per se, but it's our ability to train. ISS has a great reputation in the market as a place to learn, and that's great, but it's also bad in some way, right? It's great because we're a phenomenal school. It's bad because after a few years, our clients particularly are very interested in hiring those that actually work with them. So we have a phenomenal alumni base out in the space, because we lose people over time. Fortunately, not a lot, but certainly that's a concern that I always have. How do we keep up, and how do we keep training, and how do we keep hiring to be able to meet that demand with the quality that is necessary? The expansion of data moving incredibly fast, faster than before. How do you do that to make sure that you keep scaling up appropriately? So you see it in growth rates of people and growth rates of locations, acquisition of clients. Those are the things that I worry about. How quickly can we scale to make sure that we're meeting the growth that the market is at? And that's a huge challenge. Those are the things that worry me, right? In terms of growth of businesses, I always think that our growth should be higher than it is. So I can't tell you that I stress too much about it. I always wanted to be higher. But again, the trick here, and you probably can relate to this, the trick here is that all the parts have to move together. It's not enough to go sell. You have to deliver. You have to deliver on a timely basis. You have to deliver quality. So you have to scale your data plant. You have to scale your technology. You have to scale your marketing, right? You have to scale your financial organization, your HR organization, particularly as you grow and the growth accelerates, if not in every area, in a number of areas. And that's a challenge. That's a challenge because you have significant competition out there from your own clients who are trying to build their ESG businesses, and they're trying to build their ESG data businesses and information businesses, and they're looking to you to not only provide the data and the products, but at times the people. And that's a challenge. So those are the things that I tend to worry about. And then we are a repository for very, very sensitive client data as well. And we're very beyond careful with that. We get diligence that way by the largest financial companies in the world. So we spent a fair amount of time on trying to have the most resilient data plant and the safest, as much as you can have it in these environments. And we're very comfortable as to where we are, but that is something I worry about daily, if not 24/7 actually. So we spend a lot of time on cyber, on security, all the things that maybe go behind the scenes. But maybe that gives you a little bit of sense of the issues.
Yeah, that makes sense. That's very helpful. Thank you very much.
Thanks. Last question, at least in the list now, comes from Bruce Hamilton at Morgan Stanley. Could we please unmute Bruce?
Hi there, can you hear me?
Yes, we can, loud and clear.
Perfect, thank you. And thanks very much for the session and all the Q&A so far. So maybe just, clearly you're growing faster than the initial plan, and also you've talked about the ESG piece growing at sort of 30%. Looking back at sort of page 5, is there a way you can maybe help us think about the sustainable growth potential top line in the 4 different segments? I know it may be a bit lower in governance, but any sort of ranges to try and help us think? Because obviously, if we, if you do 25%+ in ESG, it feels like you're going to end up higher than 5 on a blended basis. But that's the first one. And then secondly, in terms of geographical penetration, is there any way you can think about, the opportunity set outside the US in terms of, you know, how much growth there, and also difficulty of hiring and so forth. Is there any, what's the biggest constraint to the growth in the sort of, you know, international part of the business? Thanks.
Maybe picking up on your growth breakdown question, I think generally, you know, we wouldn't sort of give a detailed breakdown there. I think the context that we set around some of the emphasis points are very valid, but the key element is really what Gary has been saying before, which is these increasingly come together and feed on one another. That's the way to think about it. So there clearly is the linkage between ESG data and proxy. The way this, the proxy environment is changing. There is the feeding and the support in a way that the ESG data is giving to the corporate side, and you saw the product offering there. And in a similar way, also over to MI. That's why Gary's point of, you know, the current sort of a bit accounting-driven distinction of making MI not part of ESG reported is something which over time is blending. And that's why I think that, you know, in a way, flying wheel, if I call it, in terms of mutual reinforcement, is something that is very important of how we think. That's why the connotation of separating growth dynamics is not immediate. I mean, on the opportunity outside the US, I'll hand it back to Gary, but let me just say one comment, which is, you know, one of the powers that we had in going in was the complementarity of the US legacy in some of the businesses and the global opportunity that still is there. And we found that very much confirmed. But again, Gary, you know, over to you on.
Yep. So. And I know you had a question, or part of your question was on people, but in terms of global or globality, if you think of governance as a global business already, it does have opportunities in other parts of the world. But governance is more established, if you will. It's very strong in Europe. It's very strong in the U.S. Strong in Canada. It's strong in Japan. Australia, and there are other parts of Asia that are potential opportunities. If you think about ESG, it's just, again, you can generalize by saying it's growing everywhere, and that would be a pretty accurate generalization. However, the pieces of what are growing are different. So what may be growing in the US is different than what is growing in continental Europe, which has tended to be at the forefront of the ESG movements much more than the rest of the world. What you see in Asia is maybe a little bit of catch up. And so we're trying to grow all those pieces as well. In terms of corporate solutions, it traditionally has been a US-centric business. So we see really good opportunity in Europe and to a certain degree in Asia. So we're focusing now on Europe as well going forward. We're leveraging, of course, the Deutsche Börse relationships. We're working very closely with them in some of the things that Stefan mentioned in those first few slides, and groups to see what we can do to build our corporate solutions business in that space. But sustainability inside of corporate solutions is the fastest grower, right? So it's what Stefan was saying. They leverage off each other, right? They actually, if you see positive in one, it tends to carry over to the others. It's not directly linear, but certainly it's directionally the same. And MI, you're going to start seeing a little bit more of that in terms of that. So MI is much more specific to a market, right? Discovery Data is US-centric, right? Rainmaker was Australia-centric. And UK, we have businesses there. Those are much, much more specific to local markets. So I hope I gave you.
Got it. That's really helpful. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you, Bruce.
All right. So
perfect. Thank you.
Since we came to the end of the session, since apparently there are no further questions, I'll hand over back to Stefan for some closing remarks.
Thanks, Jan. And let me kick it off by really saying thanks to Gary, not just for, you know, the transaction today, opportunity, but really for the type of effort and the momentum that ISS has continued to accelerate. That's far from, you know, obvious in a way. It's quite a specialized business, and the cultural integration and the sense of that continuity in a fast-growing market is critical, not to lose momentum. This is outperformed between the period that we discussed ahead of announcement. That's outperformed in the period between announcement and closing. And it has, as you saw in the numbers, outperformed since closing. So I think that momentum build, if I close, is why we feel so confident in the guidance that we have given and tip it up a bit. If I put it for Jan's purpose, you know, today, that's something which is an organic drive that's critical. We know how focused you are on organic growth. And at the same time, it's also been proven the attractiveness of ISS by its culture, by its management and attitude towards acquisitions. In these areas, bolt-ons are critical. That's what adds real value. That's what allows to use the flywheel that I described earlier between governance, ESG, corporate, and also MI. You know, that is accelerating through these bolt-ons, which are usable across. And, you know, info security was one of the examples where Gary showed it. Yeah. Between ESG, corporate. So I think I want to leave with you in concluding that that momentum is very much intact and accelerating. Now, clearly, you know, it is a mega trend that is underway, and it fits in that mega trend, the wider Deutsche Börse environment, in an excellent way. So we feel very confident, and I hope you got today the opportunity to also understand better the differentiation in the individual segments, which in them each are very unique. You know, to start to talk about commoditization is a, you know, far off in a way, in a world that still is gaining in differentiation and upgrading, be it custom policies or other topics. So that's why we are very, very confident that that acceleration is something that is quite sustainable in terms of how ISS is going to contribute and the benefits with the wider group, which I alluded and talked through at the beginning. We have made good progress, but as Gary would always say, we're only at the beginning. So we look forward to keeping you updated as this story develops. And thank you very much for taking the time today and for the questions. Much appreciated.